Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell, Bruce Pratt here. Bruce, welcome back. It's been, well, we had last week off, so it's been a couple of weeks.
It's been a couple of weeks, and before that, I didn't see you for a month.
I know. And you've been doing some interesting work around the homestead, huh?
We had a lot of work we thought was going to be done in the fall. A guy got hurt. He couldn't do it. We have a great new guy, but I work with him. And I'd forgotten. I haven't laid hardwood floor in a long, long time. That's really hard work. We've been doing a lot. I mean, we're rebuilding the kitchen, and we're putting a bathroom on the second floor. The whole thing is crazy. But, yeah, and I realized why. Most tradesmen I know, by 61, 62, they about had it. I couldn't keep this up for too long.
Well, I'm glad we could provide you with a little break here.
Man, I'm telling you, when I said I got to take a shower and head to Bangor, I was the happiest man in Waldo County.
You're also you're going to enjoy the wine that Eric brought in yesterday.
Oh, yeah, the Flaco Tempranillo. I can't believe that I'm going to get that. That's really good.
That was wonderful. Yeah, we enjoyed that a lot.
That's very good wine.
But we saved the reds for you.
Yes, you saved the reds for me, and I appreciate it because we've been drinking a lot of rosés and whites.
Me too.
But, you know, I think with what we're having for dinner tonight, that's going to go just fine.
Perfect. Well, we're going to revisit a book that we talked a lot about in the past year or so, but there's plenty to draw from in this because it's such a wonderful collection.
Yeah, and it's called Replays, Rivalries, and Rumbles. And what happened was I was at SLA in France last month, and Andrew Linden, who has an article in here, and I got to talking, and he said, "You read Geacher's book?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I've talked about most all of it on the air." And I thought, "Well, I haven't talked about your piece yet." I said, "But, you know," I said, "Andrew, this it's a hard thing for me to talk about because this is one of the most deflating and disappointing moments in my life as a sports fan." And so they always say you should confront your fears and, and face your sorrows and get down to the fact that on January 11th, 1987, John Elway had a drive of drives to beat my Cleveland Browns in one of the most improbable things. Now, I have to explain, why was I a Cleveland Browns fan? Like many people who lived on the cusp of the Yankee Red Sox, lived right on the line, right? Mm. When I lived in Connecticut, I grew up there. You know, Knicks, Celtics, Rangers, you know, Bruins. A lot of people just decide not to play. And my friend Rich Nurge became a Minnesota Twins, Washington racial slurs, and Lakers fan. Because that way he wasn't caught up in that.
Mm-hmm.
But my son, Zach, became a diehard Cleveland Browns fan. And he loved the Cleveland Browns. And so I thought, well, okay, you know, we'll get used to that. You know, he got a little Cleveland Browns suit when he was 6 years old, and he was just excited.
Well, those were great teams. That was the Brian Sipe team.
Oh, yeah, and up. And so then what happened is, later on, we went to see the Browns play. They beat Jerry Glanville's Oilers 13-3 at the old Municipal Stadium, across from the Dog Pound. Modell was moving the team. People were angry beyond belief. And when they won, they told us we had to come back every weekend from Connecticut because we had brought them good luck. So I have this very soft spot in my heart for the Browns. But we also forget, you know, Boston is clearly now the city of champions. You know, I'm basically a New York sports fan, but I got to tip my hat and say, well, there are more championships in the Bay State than anywhere else in a long time. Well, we forget that in the 40s and 50s, that was also very true of Cleveland.
Yeah.
Cleveland was the dominant football team. And back when the American Hockey League meant even more than it does today, when there are only six teams in the NHL, the AHL Barons were consistently a good team. They won titles, they beat people. But Cleveland was on the way down as Denver was on the way up. When the manufacturing jobs left the Rust Belt, Cleveland lost 150,000 jobs, I think it was, between 55 and 1970. And Denver was this little old town on the prairie that was growing and becoming something. And what Andrew Linden's article does, called Remembering and Reliving the Drive in Cleveland and Denver, was look how the psyches of both cities through their football franchises were changed. How Cleveland became, as Johnny Carson once said, the mistake on the lake. Now Cleveland is hopping. You can see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and these kinds of things. But Cleveland went downhill from that moment in terms of their psyche. They've got just the one championship since with LeBron. They were close with the baseball team a couple of times and fell short. Lost to the Cubs after being up 3-1. So Cleveland's been on this downspin, and Denver had a good run in football. But you got to think about some other things that play into this, which I find are really, really quite interesting. I played a gig in Detroit, in Cleveland with Jack Elliott one time down in the Flats, which is the entertainment section of the town. And I thought I would ingratiate myself to the Cleveland Browns fans by wearing my number 32 throwback Jimmy Brown jersey. It was hot. And I knew it was going to be really hot wearing that at the club. I walked on stage. I had the guitar in my hand. I said, I'm not trying to pander to anybody or anything. And nobody got it because they had gotten so far away from football. Cleveland had developed this. It's going to happen. It's going to end badly. Nothing will work for us. And then as soon as they get a championship, of course, LeBron bolts down for Miami. So what this article does, and people will love this, it starts out, it goes through the entire drive, but not in chronological order, but not all at once. They give you the set up the game, then they'll give you, it's 5 minutes, 22 seconds to go. They got this far to go. They'll go back to something else, go to something else in one city, go to something somebody said, and then slowly but surely the drive comes to its end, and then Carlos kicks the damn field goal, which wins it. But I think that you know, before you get too caught up in your city's success, you should realize that there will be a day when it will not be all roses. You know, there was a time in the 1960s when the center of the sports universe was New York. And that's what it was. It's not the center of the sports universe now, no matter what some people in my home state of Connecticut may believe. But it's a really, really remarkable article. And I saw a number of the people whose articles we've talked about here before at SLA, and they would say, you haven't talked about this one. You haven't talked about that one. So for the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about a few of the other ones in this wonderful, wonderful book, Replays, Rivalries, and Rumbles, The Most Iconic Moments in American Sports, edited by Stephen Geacher, who, of course, has been on the show, and it's from the University of Illinois Press, and Gibran can get one for you in less than a week.
Excellent. Good to have you back, sir.
It's good to be back. Looking forward to being back next week.